Welcome back to Tabu. My name's Katrina Hindley. I'm joined today by Kobe Lehrer, Stuart Mogg and Jack Dutton from EY. Kobe's from Tab. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Stuart Mogg. I run the debt advisory team in EY Financial Services.
Jack Dutton. I'm a senior manager in the team working alongside Stu.
And I'm Kobe Lehrer, Chief Strategy Officer at Tab.
On today's episode, we're going to be talking about specialist finance and all you need to know about it. Kicking off with question number one, what is the specialist finance market?
Big question to start off with, to be fair, and I think it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But for me, it's kind of anyone that's a non-bank that's lending money into consumer, SME world in the UK. And like anything, people like to create new names and subsects to kind of promote themselves. Non-bank lending, specialist finance, specialty finance, fintech, alternative finance. But yeah, for me, it's just people that are non-banks that are lending money into some of the places we're going to talk about today.
And one of the questions that we've seen online in the area is whether or not there's a difference between specialist lending and the term specialist finance.
I mean, we posed this to ourselves, and in our view, no, that there isn't. I think in this market, I think there's a lot of, in fact, we're even asking this as a question. I think there's so much you could say as to what it actually entails. But I think they're basically the same thing for us when we thought about it. I think the most important thing, how I would think about specialist finance is, you know, how has the finance system come about? Well, it's come about through banks. And what do banks seek to do? Well, the large businesses which operate on kind of economies of scale, therefore they're offering a product which is generally for the mass market population. Of course, though, there's always going to be niche instances where, you know, one of their product offerings doesn't quite fit what either an individual or a company may want. So by virtue of that, there's a whole community who, as Stuart says, tend to be non-banks that have kind of arisen. And we were talking about this earlier today, who we think are the real kind of unsung heroes, actually, of the financial services market in the UK.
I guess then that leads me on to why the specialist finance market exists. I mean, we read a lot about it. You know, it's sort of more and more common that you see it out there on the internet. We've seen references to it. Why does it exist?
I think it exists because there's a need from whether it be a corporate, SME or a consumer, and that need is not served by the mainstream. And you know, what we see a lot in this sector is a lot of entrepreneurs that see a market need and want to create a product. Some of those entrepreneurs have worked within the mainstream previously. Some of them haven't. Some of them come from outside financial services with an idea, which is really exciting and probably one of the reasons that, you know, I've looked at this market now for over 10 years and built and been part of a number of businesses that operate within it. And so I think there's always going to be a need to for financial services to evolve. And I think kind of specialist lending's at the heart of that. And the specialist lenders are able to do that because, you know, at their kind of infancy, they're able to grow at speed. They're able to kind of evolve and look at different ways of serving that end client, whoever they may be. And that's why I think not only has it grown, but it's going to continue to grow as well. And we see that more and more with new kind of financial products coming to market. And there's definitely, from my perspective anyway, there's definitely been a real kind of growth coming out of 2008 when the banks have retrenched, naturally got smaller and or changed their core areas of focus. And thus we've seen kind of specialist lending come back, I guess, in some of those core areas. You know, we're here with Tab today. You know, bridging development finance was a mainstay of a number of the UK banks post 2008. For various reasons, it really pulled back, and there was a need there for, you know, house builders, real estate professionals to borrow money, and that is how that has exploded out of that. And the growth there is a great example, I think, of why speciality lending exists, and also how it's grown so much since kind of global financial crisis of 2008.
We mentioned bridging development. What other products do these non-bank lenders offer that Tab might not offer or other people offer?
I think, yeah, I mean, obviously there's some kind of pretty standard things. So I would think, you know, firstly, What are you focusing on, either the consumer or kind of a company? So, you know, clearly SME finance, there's automotive finance, there are a whole kind of load of things, but ultimately, you know, not just kind of back to why it exists, but kind of how it exists. For that reason, there are so many different options of what you could look at. You know, if you were to think about the clients that Stu and I are looking at the moment, they're so diverse in terms of what they do. And by virtue of having all of these different niches, it's very fragmented. So the product could basically look like anything, to be quite honest. You know, it could be leasing, it could be asset finance, it could be healthcare finance. There's a whole load of different things, isn't there?
So, yeah.
Trying to think of the most obscure finance I can.
Agricultural financing, yeah, farmland.
We've been looking at a lot of agricultural finance.
We have indeed.
Just farmland, what about animals?
There is cattle financing. Yeah. Not that we've been involved in that, I have to say. But like music royalties, football transfers.
Whiskey financing. Yeah. Whiskey barrels.
Taking it back to your point about how things came about 2008, you know, and the banks retrenched, and there was still obviously a huge need for finance, and that's where the kind of things sort of boomed from there, exploded, to use your word. But 2008 is a long time ago, and banks have, you know, sort of recovered, for want of a better way of describing it, since then. Why does it still thrive? Why aren't the banks just going out there and saying, okay, thanks very much, we can now offer you those products at this rate?
I think it's probably different reasons for different asset classes. So, like, if you think about development finance as an example, you know, when you think about capital requirements on a bank, you know, 150% risk-weighted assets. So, you know, for every pound the bank lends, the amount of money they have to hold on their balance sheet for that asset is huge, and that means that that asset is not that profitable for the bank, and they could look to a buy-to-let mortgage, for example, or an owner-occupied mortgage, which is much more profitable and has a much lower RWA rating. So there's that part of it, which I think is still prevalent across a number of those asset classes. But also some of it is, you know, a market, and the size of that market, you know, may seem big for specialist lenders and us sat in the room. You know, you sort of think around some of those other asset classes, like the second charge mortgage market, for example, you know, billions of pounds market, but in the overall mortgage market and for like your mainstream banks, not large enough probably to get excited about and or to put the people and origination kind of capabilities in. And that's where kind of specialist lending comes in, probably with a bit of, you know, UTB, obviously rather large within that second charge space, but it's dominated by those non-bank lenders. So Optimum, which has been rebranded to Pepper, you know, kind of the West One secured loans platform. There's a number of those operators. So I think they're probably two reasons from my side. Jack, I don't know if you...
No, I was going to say, I think the first thing that actually popped into my head was also the capital treatment point. And, you know, if you think about some of these niches and how they come about, then, you know, again, there's a need there. And capital treatment models from banks, you know, to kind of look at it from that perspective, there needs to be a certain level of history behind it. And with kind of the regulator overlooking them, it can be sometimes quite difficult to do a completely new product because, you know, the question you would get is, or from a rating agency, where's the history? Where's the track record? And actually, you know, that's obviously magnified at that scale, but it's something that we even compete with in our own financing, actually try and raise clients' finances. How do you get a suitable track record for some of these products, which are quite new? And how do you comp it to what is out there in the market such that when you're going to get wholesale finance from a corporate bank, an investment bank, how can you give them the comfort around the track record and the history of how that product's going to perform? So I think, you know, we almost see it through the specialist lenders almost see an insight into how a bank might actually think about it. So, yeah, I completely agree with Stu from my perspective.
Sounds like there are sort of two things there. One is around perspective, around the size of the market. So, you know, a bank, which is, you know, a massive organization, looks at something which we're describing as niche, and they think, well, is this worth the time, effort, cost, etc.? Whereas for a, you know, a small specialist lender, that could be a massive opportunity and well worth the investment. So I think one thing I'm hearing from you is around perspective in terms of the size of, you know, the market.
Yeah.
And niche, you know, means small to someone and large to somebody else. But also what I'm hearing from you guys is about regulation and something which obviously affects banks, but not necessarily specialist finance lenders.
To the same degree, yeah. I think obviously regulation affects everyone in a way, but clearly, you know, I think when you combine that with shareholders, obviously, you know, FTSE 100 listed business, clearly having to take decisions in some of these areas, which may be newer, obviously that's a lot more difficult to potentially get through a kind of, potentially, not to dismiss some banks, but maybe less fast-moving environment to go through all the different approvals, which is clearly there for a reason. However, maybe not necessarily that nimble. And I think it's probably where some of the institutions who've tried to move into some of these areas haven't really been able to compete quite as well. And again, is another reason why the market continues to exist in its own way.
Cool. Answers the question.
Trying our best.
Question number two is, who uses specialist finance?
Anyone really. I think we listed some things down here before. You know, again, ultimately, you know, you're either going to be a consumer or you're going to be a business. And it could be, you know, property related. It could be related to your car. It could be unsecured loans, you know, to go and do some home improvements, whatever it might be. It could be SME finance, you know, growth, venture capital. It could be leasing. It could be asset finance. So a whole different range of things. I think the important point to note is clearly those are all different sectors and types, but actually, you know, why would you go? You know, we talked a lot about, you know, speed, ability to execute, but often these organizations, we would say, on the whole, have a kind of wider credit appetite. There's probably going to be more ability for the, you know, underwriter at relevant kind of specialist finance firm to actually sit down, understand it, and potentially put in place a more structured product, maybe one which isn't kind of less appropriate for the masses. I think, you know, with that, you know, there's an ability to kind of think outside the box. So I would tend to say, from a consumer perspective, it could be anyone, maybe who's got more, slightly more complex needs. But from the kind of company perspective, I would say it tends to be smaller businesses.
Is there types of finance that you could only get if you were a company and not as a consumer, and vice versa? Or could I kind of be like?
Yeah, I guess it's how, I guess, and so you could get, so look, I think in, from leasing or kind of asset finance, effectively you're financing the purchase of some kind of asset. And, you know, automotive car finance, whether it be kind of a hire purchase contract or kind of a PCP contract, they're effectively doing the same thing, right? They are trying to purchase an asset for the benefit of someone, and that someone could just be a business or a company. And we talk about later in terms of regulation, and clearly that has an impact in terms of how one would then behave mm-hmm. with the who underlying, you know, beneficiary is. But I think there's a lot of crossover in terms of what both could seek to do.
You've referenced sort of small businesses, and Stu, you said earlier about entrepreneurs. You mentioned that a couple of times in terms of being the sort of, I guess, key demographic for the market. Can you say a bit more about why that is?
So I think, there's a market service point that, you know, FTSE 100 business is probably better served by the mainstream financing operators than a SME or a startup SME. So generally, we talk probably more about SME than corporate, because actually a number of those products that Jack and I have talked about are probably more relevant for that demographic of people. I think why entrepreneurs are at the heart of it, I think, you know, when you look at disruption and you look at, the use of new ideas within a market, you know, you automatically find that kind of that group of people at the heart of any sector, whether it be financial services or other. So I think that's probably why we see more of that, more entrepreneurs in this part of financial services than we do others, but also why it's probably quite exciting to work. And actually, just to go back onto one of the other questions, I think that point around who uses it as well is important, because I think we've talked all about probably the real upside of businesses looking to grow, startup, SME, but actually specialist lending also covers the kind of financially excluded, some people and or businesses that maybe haven't got any mainstream options. And I think that's really important to kind of understand. I think Jack mentioned earlier about this sector being almost the unsung hero. You know, I think in part this sector offers options to those that maybe don't have many options, and I think that's actually really important, a really important point to make when we talk about specialist lending, because it is such a large breadth of things we could have sat here, I think, today and just spoken about bridging development finance, asset finance, but I think that part of the market as well is really important, and it's undergone a lot of change, regulatory change, in the right way to stop more usury products such as payday lending is a great example. But you know, if I think about auto finance as a as an asset class, you know, we work with a number of clients that help people obtain finance for use of a car to get to work or to drop their kids to school, and that car is their main asset. They don't own a house. They're renters, possibly on low income or have a detrimental point in their credit file. And yet the, some of the customers that we work with make it possible for them to kind of live a better quality of life and become financially included and build their credit profile. So I think that's kind of an important point to make.
Absolutely. But it also sounds comparable to the point around entrepreneurs, in that if the mainstream aren't servicing them, and it's obviously such an essential part of the economy, and the specialist finance market is there to service them in a way that the mainstream won't, then that's also a service that's being provided.
Absolutely.
Question number three. How does specialist finance work?
Crikey.
Yeah, again, I think there's like many different ways you could take this question. You know, it's how, you know, in terms of the mechanics of a loan. And, you know, I guess from kind of a, you know, it's going to be some form of, you know, capital, which is going out the door to finance something in the first instance, whether that be kind of, you know, for my own kind of, you know, I don't know what I buy a car or purchase a property. You know, there's going to be some outlay of capital to start with. And then obviously over that period of time, whatever the loan term may well be, whether it be 3, 5, even more number of years, have a series of different repayments. Now that could be kind of a regular amortization of payments, regular payments at intervals with kind of interest being paid, or more typical in say a bridging kind of market, actually one big payment at the end of the loan, a bullet repayment, which would kind of take the loan out, but always kind of some level of interest kind of is obviously going to be applicable to it. And I think that kind of feeds into your question around why is it expensive? And I think we battled with this, and actually, you know, how do you define what is expensive? Because, you know, headline interest rate, you know, you might be getting, I don't know, 5% from a bank, let's just say, or and then 10% versus, you know, from a specialist lender. Well, actually, if that 10% loan allows you to do what you want to do, in my eyes, that's not expensive, because why would you take on something which is paying less interest, but you can't do what you want to achieve through it? So I think, and that's often something that we talk about with our clients, you know, who do these loans, you know, they see a headline margin and they say, oh God, that's really expensive. But actually, how do you look one level below it, and what are you actually achieving? Because from a kind of efficiency and cost of capital perspective, it's far, far better. It's allowing you to use debt to go and finance something, and the exact same, you know, terms apply from my perspective. So there's that kind of, there's that answer to it. But then I think when you get into the underlying layers of it, well, why is it actually expensive? From, you know, from if you just look at it optically, well, you know, it's often how these businesses are funded. If you think about a bank, obviously retail deposits, cheap, sticky, you know, likely to move, you know, probably paying sub 1% on, you know, an interest rate. Whereas, you know, for a number of institutions in the market, having to look to kind of wholesale lending, bank capital, and they'd be kind of charging, you know, low to mid single digits on the finance that they're receiving. So clearly to make it economic, they have to scale up. So that's often the reason why.
And I guess also understanding what expensive is, it needs to be by comparison to something.
Yeah, exactly.
And I guess there's two options there. One is that there is a cheaper thing available. Well, if it's available, there are probably some restrictions on it that don't suit your business needs. Or in the alternative, it's not available to you, in which case it's not expensive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think people have a very set idea and just think, oh, this is what I have a comfortable with, and you're almost kind of biased towards the lower level. So when you see something and you may only have two options, well, there's a reason why you only have two options, because it is a niche market. So exactly as you say, Kobe.
Would you say that kind of impression of it being more expensive is just because people don't understand the kind of complexities behind it, I guess?
Also, like, what are you comparing? You know, are you comparing a it's a mortgage and 95% LTV or the 60% LTV, you're obviously always going to pay for more risk, however much you borrow. And look, it is, as Jack said, the most simple, we have the same conversation with a number of our clients, which is actually, I think price on my list of real important things is somewhere in the top five, but it's certainly, you know, flexibility. Does this meet my objectives of what I want to achieve? You know, kind of the security and the covenants around that borrow. And this is the same if you're borrowing as a consumer, as an SME, as a corporate. Yeah, these are all the same kind of decisions that you make of what do I want this for and how do I get it? And then what are the things in between? So price is there. And actually, I don't think necessarily that it is expensive in certain instances as well. You know, when you can go out and get a specialist buy-to-let product, probably there or thereabouts at the same rate as you can get a specialist buy-to-let product from a bank or challenger bank now. So I think it depends on the asset class. It depends on the situation. And like anything, it's supply and demand. What's the competition for those for that product out there? And thus, how much can I charge for that product based on that?
Just touching on, you mentioned challenger bank. Where does that sit in terms of specialist finance, bank? Is it non-lender?
Somewhere in the middle. Is probably the real easy
hybrid
answer. No, I think this kind of the challenger bank market has been a really interesting one to follow. Once again, since kind of 2008, when it was really born, and the idea that these banks were set up to challenge the kind of high street has worked, and there's been some great success stories out there. You only have to look at people like Shawbrook, Aldermore, and some of the newer, more digital banks like Starling. Been great success, grown with it all. I think with that and certain areas of the market that those banks support, they've also been and have shown a lot of the behaviours that some of the specialist lenders have, you know, quick to serve, different product range, etc. I think what you don't have, as Jack and I have talked about, is if you are working under the guise of a bank, whether you are a large high street bank or a small challenger bank, there is still a number of things that you have to consider: cost of capital, regulation, kind of overall balance sheet, you know. Whereas actually, if you are a non-bank specialist lender, some of those things you don't have to think about as much, or you think about in a different way. So I think the challenger bank market has got a huge part to play in kind of financial services, but I think it plays a slightly different role. And there are some overlaps with specialist lending, like there are with the high street and larger banks, but I think they are slightly different in how they work, although, of course, you see them a lot more in some of the products that we've talked about today than maybe some of the high street banks.
And you kind of mentioned regulation and how the banks are being regulated, or they are regulated. You know, where does specialist finance sit
growing
in regulation?
Growing, and will continue to grow, and probably for the right reasons. I think it's fair, Jack, that we don't speak to any clients who are looking to grow, develop, evolve and be successful in this market who think regulation as a concept's a bad idea. I think it gives a level playing field. I think it cuts out the opportunity for anyone to take advantage of the end consumer or business. And overall, it's a good thing. I think, I guess, a lot of it is, how's that regulation applied? Is that regulation fair and amicable? And is it achieving what it's meant to achieve? And so some of the unintended consequences of regulation have to be thought about as well. You know, as I mentioned earlier, the sort of clamp down on the kind of payday sector, I think everyone agreed that was a good thing. But then actually, where do those borrowers that had a real reason to borrow, had a real need to borrow, go and borrow? So there are some things to consider with that. So I think we'll see the continuation. You see a number of papers from the FCA on a number of the subsectors that we have engaged on. A lot of the mortgage market has been through that already post-2008 and continues. You know, back to kind of tab, I guess, bridging is now regulated and unregulated. You know, that's a newer concept for the market that has that has been adapted. But look, we think overall done right is a good thing. And there's actually, I think, majority of our clients think that as well.
Great. Question number four. Why is specialist finance so popular?
Ooh. Well, I don't know. I think we need to make it more popular.
Yeah.
Personally, because our kind of, you know, keeps me and Stu in the job. I think we need to make it more popular.
Keep banging that drum.
Yeah, and it's back. And it's, we will, and it's back to that whole, you know, what we talked about before, kind of perceptions of what actually, you know, stuff achieves. And I think actually, you know, rightly or wrongly, I think all the press around some of the payday stuff you know, even when I talk to my friends who, you know, reasonably intelligent individuals, they don't often understand what I do. And is around the perception of stuff that gets, you know, obviously in naturally by the news, some of the bad stuff in the news gets more press. And actually, I think sometimes some are tarnished with that brush. So, but in actual fact, there's so much more that, you know, people could achieve if they were to actually look to the specialist finance market. Mm. So, yeah, I'd actually flip it around. I think it is popular in certain sectors, but we need to try and make it more popular.
We've talked about price loads today, but actually probably what we should have been talking about is, yeah, how do we get this product out there more? Mm-hmm. You know, you look at a number of the subsectors within the market, and they've grown exponentially, right? You know, kind of bridging, development, auto finance, buy to let, all that kind of good stuff. I think 15% now of all buy to let mortgages are out of the specialist lending space. 30% of loans to SMEs are. But how do we grow that, and how do we make this less about a niche, kind of fragmented, almost kind of last resort product, and more actually, well, why don't you think about that first and foremost? Why would you do that? Why can't you do this? So I think that is more mainstream press. I think that's more education of like consumers and SMEs about why these products work and why they're good for the end user. Us coming on things like this and talking to you guys is another great example, hopefully. And that's, I guess, why, you know, Jack and I, and kind of, you know, working for a firm such as EY as an example, but being able to support a sector like this, we are always banging the drum around kind of this market and what makes it so special. But we'd love to help to make it bigger and more people know about it and more people are supportive of it.
Yeah. Do you think that's like the main change since 2008 is the sort of that increasing foothold in, you know, mainstream lending?
Yes, absolutely.
I think part of it is, as well, is since 2008 is, you know, more institutional funding kind of coming into the market and actually has made it more professional. I think earlier on, you know, I think when Stu and I worked at NatWest, you know, there was a lot more kind of smaller band of businesses which were, you know, professional enough or institutional enough for financing, and that's only grown and grown and grown. And you know, you need to make capital move efficiently. It's all well and good having appetite and demand for it, but if there's not efficient capital to put into the market, then it can't grow. So how do you get that? Well, you need to educate, you know, all the people that we speak to, the lenders, you know, funds, investment banks, corporate banks. And clearly there's a lot of kind of, we call them niche, but there's a lot of well understood products like bridging, development has seen the benefits of it, but the aim is to try and do that more and more and more across all of the different bits of specialty finance to get investment into it so they can get it out to people to actually benefit from it.
I mean, there's more money now from a private equity, credit fund, bank perspective in this market that we've seen since 2008, and that gives optionality. We've seen money, global money coming into the UK market, not just UK and European money, that's helped backed a number of these businesses. So I think that's a real testament to those that work in the industry, that they have rebuilt trust post 2008 and also kind of showcased these markets as ones that are investable in. And, you know, we've started to see some larger ticket M&A activity within the market that we think is going to continue, and we've seen some good exits from a number of private equity firms within this market, which will only build confidence. And likewise, on the kind of the wholesale funding, the debt side, you know, we continue to see newer type of structures, kind of whole loan, forward flow, securitization, on and off balance sheet. I mean, there's a whole plethora. I think one of actually the big issues with this market is that, and I mentioned it at the start when we were talking about what actually is specialist lending, there's so many acronyms, different ways of saying things. You know, people do, you know, conceptually overcomplicate this, but, you know, this lending is either secured or unsecured. So either there's an asset or there's not an asset, and it's either to a consumer or a business. And, you know, it doesn't have to be more complicated than that. And then it's the fundamentals behind that of that business and how it's run. And that's what we try and do, I think, I guess, as a living, which is simplify this both for our clients, but also businesses that are looking to invest. So I think that simplification is needed as well, and just almost taking away some of the abbreviations and different names for different things would make everyone's life, I think, a lot easier, and probably actually easier then to market this and to, you know, educate wider and afar about what we do, we all do in this market, sat in this room.
I mean, I think what comes across is the, you know, we use the word niche, but, you know, actually, if you think about the breadth of sectors that we've been talking about so far, I mean, it's huge. And you think about, you know, we've mentioned automotive, you know, we've mentioned property, of course, that's where we work. I mean, these are, you know, enormous sectors that are very sort of everyday. So niche doesn't feel quite right. And I guess that's kind of the move towards the mainstream as well. Yeah. But yeah, I guess that speaks to the direction of travel for the market.
I think absolutely.
Moving on to our final question. Who are the providers of specialist finance?
So I think we've talked about this quite a bit, right? You know, in terms of it's just this pool of non-bank lenders that is so long, and they can be UK-based, they can be global providers that have come in and looked at the UK market. There's just a whole like kind of myriad of different ways. And look, even some of the products that we associate, buy now, pay later, as an example, as a product that I associate with specialist finance market. I saw the other day that NatWest were launching their own buy now, pay later product, right? So you are starting to see kind of almost institutionalizations of some of those newer type products in the market. So I think in terms of where can you find them, I think they're all around. We jumped on the train up here. The advertising for some of these brands on the tube, on the overland at the stations is massive. Google ad searches, brokers, there's just a whole way of finding them. I think it doesn't get away from the education, because you may read an advert and think, well, that sounds interesting, but what actually is that? So it goes back to the education piece. But I think for those looking for this finance, it's everywhere. It's probably a little bit of actually consolidating that down and finding an easier place to go. But be interested to hear, I guess, your view as Tab, really, on that, sat as a lender in the market. And, you know, how do people find you within this market? It'd be quite helpful to know.
Well, you mentioned brokers, and I think, you know, that's the mainstay of our business. And I think it's, you know, the obvious route to specialist lenders. You know, just speaking about Tab, it's something like 85% of our business comes through brokers. And so, you know, there are a plethora, hundreds and thousands of, you know, brokers out there of varying sizes, and, you know, they will be able to understand, or a good broker will understand, you know, what the different lenders are providing, both in terms of, you know, we've talked about price, we've talked about flexibility, and that way they'll be able to offer their clients, you know, the different options across those different lenders, and, you know, guide them to the one that sort of suits them best. Yeah, I guess that's sort of the fundamental, the main way of answering that question. But yeah, it's absolutely an essential part of our business.
Would you guys be able to find me finance for a farm I want?
I think we try.
Yeah.
Or would
we
that try. Be kind of, would I have to Google?
I think it's more like, I mean, our clients are generally, at EY, are generally lenders of salt. But it's an interesting question, because before I started working and doing this, absolutely no way would I be able to answer that question. But you work so far within the market. And actually, I mean, to start off with, we had to educate internally where we've been on this sort of stuff, because, mm-hmm. you know, second charge mortgage to us sounds really normal. But, you know, to those that haven't ever had to have a use for a second charge mortgage, maybe not so much. And the same with an agricultural loan, yeah, I could probably point you in the direction of about five providers now, but only because I've done that as a job. So I think this goes back right round to that educational piece and the power of Google, which always definitely turns up trumps. If you Google agricultural funding, you will find some agricultural funders.
Perfect. That's what I'll do this afternoon. Cool. Well, any more questions, Kobe?
I think we're good. Thank you.
Thank you both for joining us. It's been really great having you here.
Pleasure.
Kobe, thanks again for coming. And see you next time, everyone. Hope you all enjoyed it. Any questions, let me know and I'll get back to you. See you next time. Bye.